WFFF Jeffersonville. W233AH Monticello.
From WJFF, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, gun safety. Thousands of young people are descending on Washington, D.C. today to urge Congress to pass stricter gun laws following a spate of recent mass shootings. For local perspective, Radio Catskills' Patricia Lobayo speaks to Dr. Matthew Evans, superintendent of the Monticello Central School District, about the tragedy in Texas and how the school district is reacting. Eating upstate, Aaron Shearer visits the new Munson Diner in Liberty, plus an excerpt from the Pride Time podcast and The Other Oz, El Otro Oz, a bilingual reimagination of the classic Wizard of Oz, having its premiere at the Forestburg Playhouse. We'll get a preview from FB Playhouse Artistic Director Franklin Trapp, and we'll go live to the Livingston Manor Trout Parade. All that coming up, but first, the news from NPR.
From NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. March for Our Lives is returning today. Rallies planned around the country to push for gun safety laws following the shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas. Tens of thousands expected at the rally in Washington, D.C., where Raquan Brown is planning to speak about losing friends and family to gun violence while growing up in the nation's capital.
People just want to be safe. People want to be able to imagine that their children will live, and people want to imagine that they can live as well.
Demonstrators are set to demand gun restrictions at hundreds of protests. NPR's Amy Held reports rallies are being held as a bipartisan group of governors works to limit mass shootings from happening time and again.
A group formed by students who survived the Parkland, Florida high school shooting 4 years ago is spearheading today's rallies, including the main one in Washington, to call for an end to gun violence. This week, the House passed a bill limiting the purchase of military-style weapons, like the one used to kill 21 children and teachers at school in Uvalde, Texas. It has almost no chance of becoming law. The Senate is considering narrower proposals that address school safety, mental health support, and red flag laws to remove guns from those deemed a danger. Now, a new bipartisan group of governors is working to come up with what they call common sense recommendations at the state and local levels to reduce the likelihood of another Uvalde. Amy Held, NPR News.
The national average retail price for a gallon of regular gasoline now tops $5 for the first time ever. AAA says prices are likely to remain elevated for the time being amid increasing demand and rising oil prices. The defense ministers of the U.S., South Korea, and Japan discussed closer cooperation following a spate of North Korean missile tests. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports that ties between the two U.S. allies remain strained by Japan's 35-year colonization of Korea that ended following World War II.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with Lee Jong-sop and Nobuo Kishi on the sidelines of the Shangri-La Dialogue Defense Forum in Singapore. The three discussed joint exercises, including monitoring and issuing warnings about missile launches, presumably from North Korea. They also pledged to prevent North Korea from evading UN sanctions by, for example, ship-to-ship oil transfers. Meanwhile, in Pyongyang, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un told a meeting of the ruling Workers' Party that the nation needs to beef up its military capabilities and meet power with power, although he made no specific mention of the U.S. or South Korea. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
The war in Ukraine casting a shadow over the Shangri-La Security Conference. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke by video link, insisting Ukraine will prevail over Russia. Ukraine urging the West to swiftly deliver more heavy weapons. You're listening to NPR News. Secretary of State Antony Blinken defending the decision not to invite the leaders of Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua to the just-concluded Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles.
In the case of Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, they were here at the summit. I met with them. I met with human rights defenders. I met with civil society from those countries. And I would argue that they are more representative of the people in those respective countries than their current governments or regimes.
Mexico's leader, along with leaders from other Central American countries, stayed away to protest the exclusion. President Biden is to be in New Mexico this afternoon because of the wildfires there. He'll be in Albuquerque amid a heat wave stretching from California to Texas. Reporter Claire Tregesser, member station KBBS, says temperatures could reach a triple digits.
While deserts and mountain areas in Southern California will have higher than average temperatures, it will stay mild on the coast. Temperatures there are expected to stay in the 80s. But while this heat wave may not be as severe, much more is in store this summer. So says Alex Tardy, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service.
Unfortunately, yeah, it does look like it's a sign of things to come for the upcoming summer, where we have to deal with excessive heat.
The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning for the Southern California deserts, where temperatures could reach 118 degrees. Inland areas will also see temperatures in the high 90s or around 100. For NPR News, I'm Claire Tregesser in San Diego.
And this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Melville Charitable Trust, committed to ensuring all people have a safe, stable, and affordable home that allows them to thrive. Information about ways to prevent and solve homelessness is at MelvilleTrust.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As NPR News has been reporting, the March for Our Lives demonstration is taking place in Washington, D.C. today, less than a month after 19 students and two teachers were killed in a school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and 10 black people were gunned down in a supermarket in Buffalo, New York. Similar marches are set to be held in more than 450 cities in the United States and around the world today to urge lawmakers to pass stricter gun laws. It includes marches in Scranton and New Paltz in our area. Radio Catskills Patricio Rubio spoke to Dr. Matthew Evans, superintendent of the Monticello Central School District, about the tragedy in Texas and how the school district is reacting.
Well, we continue to be vigilant, review our protocols and practices, and make sure they are being done to the best of our ability. And our safety personnel and school security staff, review and, give us feedback on potential areas for improvement. We continue to conduct our regularly scheduled drills for lockouts, lockdowns, hold in place. Our school safety teams, meet monthly to review protocols and plans. And it's just, it's just a matter of, getting, the right personnel and protocols going, practicing them, and then reviewing their effectiveness. And whenever any of these things come up, I know with like Uvalde, there was, I don't know how it was ultimately found, but some question about whether an exterior door was propped open or unlocked or what have you, or how the person gained access to the building. We look at, we have regular school security staff who do regular building sweeps, and they make sure that all exterior doors are locked and closed. We make sure that we have a single point of entry in all of our schools. In each of our schools, there are vestibules. So in other words, if a visitor is coming to the school, they first get buzzed into kind of a holding area. They present their credentials and why they're visiting the school before then they're buzzed in again to the school itself. So those are just some of the things that we look at.
Were those things in place before Texas? That was just normal practice, the sort of the double entrance?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was all normal practice. We also have school resource officers. We were recently informed, before Uvalde, mind you, from the Monticello Police Department that they were no longer able to provide us with an SRO because they're short-staffed in one of our schools. So we reached out to the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, and they have since provided us with a school resource officer to fill that position. So, we're obviously grateful for the Sheriff's Department for being able to fill that. We're thankful, for our previous partnership with the Monticello Police Department and understand why they needed to do what they did. But, it's just whenever things like that come up, we want to make sure we can fill any of those gaps as they present themselves.
Since the tragedy, if you could just tell us if you have a sense of were teachers frightened, were teachers concerned, were students being vocal about what's happening? What was sort of the mood there, for lack of a better word?
I can't speak completely fully about that, but I, you know, based on what has gotten to me, I would say it was kind of a range of emotions from, you know, anxiety and fear, to, perhaps, you know, people who, you know, have kind of lived through these, you know, sadly since Columbine, if you will, and even before that, going back into the 90s where you had, you know, pretty significant school shooting, school violence as well. That, you know, it's sadly another a tragic incident in our schools in this country that, you know, we do everything we can as school districts to make sure that our buildings are safe and secure and, that students and staff can feel secure in them. But we can only go so far, you know, and I think we still want schools that are accessible to parents and community members, on a fairly regular basis. But, you know, it does, you know, in some cases, you know, sometimes for some people, it probably becomes, they probably become, I don't want to say numb to it, but, you know, we've sadly seen this before, you know, when I heard the news of Uvalde, I thought to myself that, boy, that sounds an awful lot like, Sandy Hook. And it's sad. It really is. And we don't want a society to, as a society, we don't want to feel that apprehension and fear, nor do we want to be, you know, numb to it. You know, I think it was, you know, I would say, what I've heard is, you know, kind of a range of all of those emotions, much like society at large.
So can you expand a little on that a little bit more? You know, you watching the news that day of what's happening in elementary school and you being the in charge of the school district, central school district, what were your thoughts? What were your first thoughts? What were your first feelings about what was happening?
Well, my initial thoughts, I think, like any of us, is shock, you know, sadness for the families involved. And, you know, once that subsides and as more information comes out as a superintendent, I start to look at, all right, so how did this go down? What happened here? What was the school's response? You know, were there gaps in there? And then I think about our systems and, you know, do we have similar vulnerabilities or issues that, you know, we can correct now? So those are, you know, kind of how I walk through the process, you know, and, you know, but like everybody, you know, my initial feelings are shock and sadness and thinking about those children and their the children, the teachers and their families.
Now you mentioned the things that sort of were in place, or I just want to make sure, have any changes have been made that you could speak about since the tragedy in Texas?
Well, yeah. Well, there are discussions underway. I mean, I think we're continuing to build upon our social emotional programs, and, you know, looking ahead to next year, putting more social emotional supports in place for improving connections between students and staff members. We want every student who might be feeling anxious or upset or depressed or disconnected, that we want them to know that there is a caring adult in their school, whom they can reach out to talk to, and that they do matter and that we want them to feel safe and secure. So we continue to kind of build upon those programs. We're also looking at, and this depends on the availability of law enforcement officers to, you know, bring in additional school resource officers. I think, you know, we have, you know, the money in our budget to support that. But, you know, I know like every other employer in American society right now, you know, law enforcement agencies are, you know, I can't speak for them, but I know like with Monticello Police Department, they had to pull ours because they were short staffed.
Now, information is still coming out from Texas. You know, every day we're learning something new about either the response from the police or lack of response from the police or things that schools have done. You touched on some of the things, but has there been any kind of initial lessons learned? Unfortunately, you know, every situation like this, you know, when it happens, there's always something that you could take away from it that could help, you know, improve the lives and the safety of the schools. Has there any been sort of lessons learned from this tragic event?
So I can't speak to the kind of the law enforcement angle of it. I know there's, you know, questions about there in Uvalde, the response there. But one of the, I think, common threads that I've observed between Uvalde, Buffalo, what happened at the tragedy that happened there, and then even going back to Parkland several years ago, those were all young adults. I think even Parkland, it may have been a student if I were, you know, a senior in the school. I can't recall specifically this time, but they're all young adults. So those are young men who recently graduated high school or were in high school who were relatively close to school yet. So I think, you know, drawing from that, we're taking that information and looking at our social emotional supports for kids and trying to improve upon them. We're revising our code of conduct presently to include more, you know, kind of group and individual supports for students in our schools. So those are some of the, you know, kind of, I guess, the immediate response that we're looking at in terms of what we can affect as a school.
Yeah, you know, mental health, that's something that came out of this, the discussion of mental health, and it's like these people were young. Even going back to Columbine, the kid who did it was a kid.
Those were students, right?
Yeah, they were students who did it. And they said, you know, so you want to improve on that in the future or building on that. Now, what's available now for the students if a student is troubled?
Certainly. We have dedicated social workers and counselors in all of our schools. We've conducted surveys gauging students' feelings of, you know, security, connectedness, anxiousness or not, you know, and how do they relate with their peers, how do they relate with adults, to try to better identify our students' needs. And we'll continue to kind of expand on kind of group and individual counseling next year. But right now, yeah, there's counselors in our schools who are very dedicated professionals, social workers, and other, you know, administrators, nurses, and teachers and staff who are, you know, willing and open to respond to the needs of their students.
Now, you have school years ending. This is the last month of school. You have graduation coming up towards the end of the month. You have prom coming up at the end of the month. Has there any been changes to that as far as that you could speak of as far as maybe increased insecurity? Have those thoughts been discussed? Have those ideas have been discussed? Maybe have we need increased security because this is a large event and something could happen?
Well, we have, I think our proms are finished now, but we are coming up on graduation season. And we are, you know, obviously planning out the security detail for that. We normally have law enforcement and school security staff at our graduations. As we get closer, or I should say right now, we've begun discussions around what that detail will look like. And then certainly, you know, we're operating weeks after these tragic events. So they'll be on the tops of everyone's minds.
I mean, my thoughts are just with the students, just because putting myself in their places in this past 2 years, not only have they been through a pandemic, but now they have to deal with the thought of a shooter coming to their school. I just don't know how do you deal with that? But like I said, I think time will tell to see what are these sort of effects, mental health effects of those students. I know, you know, hearing interviews from those who survived Sandy Hook or the parents who deal with Sandy Hook is just something that was with them for the rest of their lives. And just, you know, we just hope that no tragedy will come here to Sullivan County or any schools in the area. Luckily, as of right now, I haven't been reported any kind of school threats to the Monticello School District. I've seen a lot of them in Orange County. There's been some school shutdowns already. Also in Ellenville, you know, non-credible threats happening. And I know last year or a year before that, before the pandemic, there were some non-credible threats done to the Monticello School District through social media, things like that. So, you know, it's scary that people come out and sort of think of it as a joke and sort of, want to play with people's emotions through social media and things like that. So it's, hopefully this school year ends in a nice, in a positive way and nothing tragic happens. But like I said, it's scary. I find for myself as a reporter going to events and things like that, I have to think about something could happen. And it's a scary way to live. I don't know if you're feeling the same way or if any of the teachers have expressed to you that sort of feeling that it's scary just to go anywhere now.
Well, just to be clear about our district, we did receive some social media threats back in early December that caused us to switch to remote instruction for a couple of days. And since that time, we have had instances where there's been like alleged threats that we've had to investigate, nothing that's been credible or that's got to the level of where we had to, you know, either shut down or go to remote instruction. But in all of those instances, we have a very close working relationship with law enforcement. And, you know, we really appreciate their dedication, their support, their professionalism in working through those issues as they come up. I know, like the ones that happened in December, they were like a couple days solid of law enforcement really turning over every stone to get to the how those threats came to be. And those were sadly students who decided to go online and make some statements that, you know, ultimately were not credible. But until you can, you know, show they're not credible, we kind of have to treat them as such. And but those students were, you know, they were dealt with. You know, I can't speak for every adult in the organization, but I know that there are adults in the organization who, you know, who are anxious sometimes, who have concerns about it. And, you know, there are others who, you know, come to work every day and know that, you know, there are, you know, they trust the school's security system. And they go about doing their jobs as professionals and in service of the students of this community. And you know, that's what we do as educators. You know, we signed up to help kids, to further them along in their careers. And, we're here for them. And we're also here for each other too.
Dr. Evans, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, are any last thoughts or any message, do you want to give before we go?
Well, just look, if any community member comes across any type of threat towards a school, no matter how small it is, contact, you know, your school's administration immediately. Even if you think it's trivial or non-credible, sometimes there's more to it than what meets the eye. The sooner that we know about these, we can act promptly and make sure that our schools remain safe and open for everyone.
Well, Dr. Evans, again, thank you so much for talking to us, you know, and letting us know the sort of the response, the aftermath of what happened of Texas and how it's affected the Miles Law School District. And I hope that everything goes well this year and you guys have a successful end of school year and graduation and nothing happens. So thank you so much for talking to us and letting us know what's going on.
My pleasure, Patricio. Stay well and stay safe.
We were talking to Dr. Matthew Evans, superintendent of the Monticello Central School District. For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Roballo.
We'll take a short break, and when we return, Eating Upstate with Aaron Shearer at the new Munson Diner in Liberty. This is Radio Chatskill.
The latest Top 40 British Folk Music album chart is just out, so next time on The Waggle-O-Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing the newcomers and the high flyers. So join me, please, for The Waggle-O-Load of Monkeys chart show next Sunday afternoon at 3.
The Deepwater Literary Festival returns to Narrowsburg June 17th to 19th. This year's celebration of the written word will focus on Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, with local authors, artists, world-class writers like Joyce Carol Oates and Marlon James, and the world premiere of Olaf and His Girlfriend, a new performance based on a story by Anne Petrie at the Tustin Theater. Deepwater Literary Festival, June 17th to 19th. DeepwaterFestival.com. Paid for by Deepwater Literary Festival.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Munson Diner is a historic diner located in Liberty, New York. It was manufactured in 1945 and is typical of American diners of the 40s and 50s. In 2005, it was moved from West 49th Street and 11th Avenue in New York City to Liberty, and in 2006, it was added to the National Register of Historic Places. In 2018, the new Munson Diner opened its doors under the ownership of Christos and John Kritikos. Radio Catskills' Aaron Shearer visits the new Munson Diner in her series, Eating Upstate.
The new Munson Diner is an old Manhattan diner that's been given a second life in the Catskill Mountains. Originally located in Hell's Kitchen, it now sits on a hilltop in Liberty. Despite some legendary appearances in TV shows and commercials, it had a hard time finding its footing after its relocation in 2005, opening and closing several times. That is, until Christos Kritikos, a New York City transplant himself, bought the diner in 2017, and his unique brand of familial, Greek-influenced hospitality has kept the new Munson Diner open ever since. Here's Christos' son Stavros, who serves as new Munson's general manager, explaining the secret of their success.
It's our commitment. And one thing I feel like a lot of restaurants these days are lacking is in that hospitality service aspect. You know, one thing my father really pushes is the quality of our food and our hospitality. Like I said earlier, whenever a customer comes in, my father makes effort for our staff and himself and me and my brother to memorize names, truly understand how people are. You get the experiential is just as important as the food service aspect in our establishment. So when people come in, they're greeted with a smile. Their Pepsis are always overflowing and refilled. That's something I feel like previous operators never could capitalize on. I think they mostly focus on the Seinfeld and the nostalgia aspect, but for us, we're a people-first business.
The new Munson Diner was built by the Coleman Dining Car Company in Lebanon, New Jersey in 1945. Soon after, it was moved to the corner of 49th Street and 11th Avenue in the Manhattan neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen. And for many years, it was operated by a relative of the Kritikos family.
We had recently found out after purchasing the establishment that one of our, I think, great uncles or great cousins had ownership of this restaurant when it was on 11th and 48th Street in Manhattan.
A 2011 New York Times profile characterized the diner in its Manhattan prime as, quote, men and women in evening dress swap jokes with men in overalls. It was featured in commercials for American Express and TV shows like Kojak. Perhaps most famously, it appeared in a 1996 episode of Seinfeld titled The Bizarro Jerry. But like a lot of Manhattan real estate, it found itself at the mercy of gentrification. By 2004, paving the way for an expansion of a Volvo dealership, the Munson car was put up for sale for a paltry $33,500 and a request that it be moved elsewhere. The following year, the then 25-year-old Jeremy Gerlich and several other investors bought the car and moved it to Liberty with hopes that it would usher in a new era of Catskills tourism. Over the next decade, the diner would cycle through several different owners, each only lasting a short time. It also made an appearance in the movie called Hits, directed by comedian and part-time Sullivan County resident David Cross. For a time, there was even talk about moving the Munson car back to New York City, this time Park Slope in Brooklyn. But in 2017, the new Munson Diner's fortunes changed. Christos Kritikos, a Bronx native and businessman, purchased the diner, which at that point had been closed for 2 years. He revamped and reopened the diner as a mix of greasy spoon staples, as well as his own take on Greek classics like souvlaki. Prior to purchasing the diner, he ran a limousine business for 20 years, and according to Stavros, no matter what time he came home, he always found time to cook a meal.
Funny enough, while my dad was working 12 hours, 16 hours, numerous hours at his limousine business, he would always come home at night and always make sure he would cook for the family. That was probably one of his biggest things, was always setting the dining room table, whether it be at midnight, 1 in the morning, we'd always come together and he'd always cook, whether it be a souvlaki sandwich, Greek lasagna, any variety of dishes. My entire life, he'd always make sure to cook.
When rideshare services like Uber and Lyft came into fashion, he realized he had to get out of the limousine business. At a loss of what to do, Christos visited a monastery in the Catskills and had an epiphany. After a few conversations with trusted family members, he bought the new Munson Diner.
It was as if the stars aligned and it's as if God wanted him to land here.
With the new Munson Diner, Christos was able to transform a personal passion into a tremendous success.
He turned something that he knew he could do with his family, and he scaled it up. And slowly but surely, he built it up into the business that it is today. Part of our culture here at the diner is we always want to make people feel like they're at home with our Greek hospitality. And one thing my father was always known for is whenever you would come to his house, you would always leave it with a full stomach, and he felt that providing Greek entrees would, I guess, give you that authentic Kritikos experience at a restaurant. It's probably something I've heard most often than not is our Greek food has been our repeat orders, I guess you could say. So our American and our Greek are probably on par with each other.
Although not specifically a farm-to-table operation, the new Munson Diner will work with local businesses when it's specifically requested.
We cater to that on occasion. It's usually if we get approached by any local businesses, because we do believe in giving back to the community. And if we ever find the opportunity to serve farm fresh eggs or anything like that, we'll utilize that and we'll advertise appropriately.
Stavros believes that what's at the heart of the success of their ownership has been a focus on making good quality food and keeping the Seinfeld and Manhattan connections ancillary. Still, the restaurant gets a lot of traffic from Seinfeld fans, as well as those who dined at the new Munson when it was located in Manhattan.
We left any Seinfeld memorabilia there, and we let the story talk for itself. I mean, that wasn't at our forefront, because like I said, you know, we care more about our customers being happy than pushing some Seinfeld nostalgia. It's good to have, don't get me wrong, you get the occasional Seinfeld crew, and we cater to that, but once again, we want our customers to be happy and full. Probably more than the Seinfeld crew, you know. Maybe on average in a given week I'll have 20 groups of people that will say, oh my God, I remember when this was in the city, and it's like walking down memory lane to see the same flooring and the same aesthetic. It's quite a unique aspect about our restaurant that not many other restaurants have up here, is the fact that it was an entire physical structure in hustling, bustling Manhattan. But now it's in the rural parts of the Catskills.
With the pandemic now waning, Christos and Stavros are now focusing on expanding their occupancy by building out for more outdoor seating.
Currently, we're finishing up our deck extension with potential, I guess, endeavors to maybe expand our space further and make our kitchen bigger so we could service even more people in the Catskills. Because one of the things my dad wants to do is scale up, build your business, and try to give back as much as you can.
The new Munson Diner is located at 12 Lake Street in Liberty. I'm Erin Shear. Eating Upstate is a production of WJFF Radio Catskill.
And we'll be right back with Pride Time. This is Radio Catskill.
Recently on Wait Wait, Maz Jobrani expressed some doubt about Tom Cruise's other film franchise.
By the way, if you do the Impossible Mission 43 times, it's clearly possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm Peter Sagal. If any of our panelists are caught or killed during this week's show with special guest Kenan Thompson, well, that would be really surprising. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition.
Nationally, one out of six people are food insecure, but here in the Hudson Valley region, it's more like one in five.
Weeknights at 6:30.
There's scientific evidence to show that chemical compounds in living soil promote wellness.
Right after All Things Considered.
We do a lot locally, and we also do a lot globally.
The Local Edition on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On his podcast Pride Time, Dale Blagrove takes a look at LGBTQIA plus issues in our region. And today, he's spilling the tea.
Hey, and I'm here again with John Vega, my wellness expert. I have to kind of clue you guys into, if you have not done such yet, kind of like a good doctor or a good therapist, I think everyone needs an expert wellness person in their life just to make things go a little bit more easier and just more fun and pleasant. Today, once again, we're back with John Vega, who happens to be my wellness expert. And I just love talking to him and love giving you the information that he has. One of the things I asked him to talk about with us today, because it's springtime, spring has sprung at last. Anyways, I've asked John to come to talk to us about something really important. And that is going to be about teas for the spring. I love amazing iced tea. And so I kind of tasked him or asked him for his expertise on what he would recommend. So, John, how are you?
Hey, Dale. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I love it. Thanks.
Well, no, thank you. I always love having you back and talking. So you're so much fun. But I'm really interested in teas this week.
Yeah. So teas have always been popular. You know, it's been used for centuries for medicinal purposes. And like you mentioned, you enjoy a nice iced tea. So people also using it recreationally and also just for the pleasure of drinking the tea itself. But right now, like you mentioned, it is springtime. I know everybody's ready to mingle, ready to move. And with that, there are certain things that can come about, you know, and can happen, which is, for example, just having too much on your plate, having too much to do, not knowing where to go, where to start. You know, we always say spring cleaning, you know, you want to have plans. You want to start doing something. So there's one particular tea blend that I wanted to talk to you about today.
Oh, nice.
And it's the circular thinking tea. Do you know what circular thinking is?
I'm thinking spinning around in circles, maybe?
Yeah, that's pretty much a good guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, circular thinking is when you just can't move forward. You just continue thinking about something. You continue tracing your steps back and saying, why did I make this decision? Did I make the right decision? It doesn't allow you to go forward. So,
oh my God, it's kind of like you...
Yeah, exactly. Well, this blend, the key ingredient is passion flower. And passion flower is just beautiful because it grows in the wild. It has its trellis that just spins around and grabs to things. And that's what keeps it moving. So that is basically the key ingredient to help us move forward. So it's passion flower, valerian root, which is very grounding, and lavender flower, which is cleansing. Something that I found out, which is interesting, I did not know that the Latin root for the word lavender means to wash. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, holy mackerel.
Yeah, so think about lavender. It's like washing, cleansing yourself, and again, allowing you to leave everything behind and move forward. So this is a beautiful blend, the circular thinking tea.
And all these and all these ingredients or teas or flowers or herbs, they're readily available, which is, I think, incredible as well. So it doesn't have to be complex.
Yeah. The blends that I'm bringing to you today, they're things that you can get, well, even if you want in your backyard, if you have, you know, the space to grow these.
That I think is wonderful because I'm personally a big fan of making sun tea. So if I can just walk through my backyard and grab the ingredients and throw them in a pitcher and let them sit and soak, that's the ideal way to spend the spring and summer.
I love it. You're so fabulous. It's amazing.
So what else do you have for us now that I have a vision of what I'm going to be doing this spring?
Yeah. Well,
what else do you have for us?
Well, the other thing that I have is an astragalus immune support tea. And with springtime, it happens a lot that people get usually like the spring cold, I like calling it, you know, because the weather is changing. We don't know what to wear. And we get this, a cold or we get allergies. So this astragalus, first of all, is considered, according to Chinese medicine, the key ingredient to help boost the immune system and to help actually relieve allergies.
Wow.
So this tea blend is astragalus root, ginger root, which is nice and warming, dried orange peel, a couple of cloves, and a pinch of cinnamon. So it's really nice and
out of here.
Warm. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. That's incredible. And I love ginger. And that's that's something that, and ginger is also good for your digestive system as well, if I'm correct.
It is. Yeah, it is. Now, the other thing is, if people are suffering with severe allergies, I like adding a couple of slices of licorice root. So just a couple of slices in there, because mm-hmm. that's going to help even boost more your immune system to fight all these allergies.
Yeah, you know, I'm fortunate I don't suffer from allergies per se, like most people, that, mm-hmm. you know, it really knocks them out and takes them for a loop. And this sounds like this could be a great way to alleviate some of that stress.
Yeah.
On the system.
And again, these are ingredients that are super easy to find. If you're not fabulous like, you know, Dale, and you're not growing your own herb garden in your backyard, you can go to your local supermarket or farm stand and you can get these ingredients.
Well, okay, let's just clarify. That stuff grows like weeds in my backyard. It's not like I'm really a gardener, but I see them out there. So that's okay.
All right. Well, something that you find in your backyard, which a lot of people have, are dandelions. Have you seen those in your backyard?
Yes, that's what I want to hear about.
So, yes. Yeah, so my third recipe that I'm completely excited about is a dandelion digestion bitter. So this is not a tea. This is something that you're going to make in vodka. So,
okay.
Dale.
Okay.
And it's really good for digestion. So it's going to help keep, again, going in line with keeping everything moving, keeping everything just free in your body. It's going to help with digestion. And it's dandelion root, roasted cacao nibs or shells, and again, dried orange peel. So you're going to mix these ingredients with 40% or more proof vodka, and you're going to let that sit for 2 weeks, shake it around, and then you can have that directly neat in your mouth, or you can put it in a nice cocktail.
That sounds absolutely perfect for me. You lost me at vodka. However, I resonate with this particular blend because it's bitter. Right. And so
who's
more bitter than I am most of the
time?
No, I'm not. But the name is fantastic. I do actually have an interest. These recipes, they have orange peels in them.
Yes.
And is there a particular type of orange, or how does that work? Should it be a navel orange? Can I get away with using tangerines?
Well, you want an orange that has a thick skin. So tangerines are more fine. They're more thin. So
I would bitter orange, one with thick skin.
Go ahead. Yes, exactly. There you go. Yeah, just because. So the whole reason for the orange peel, it just gives it more aroma. It's for the aromatic purpose of it. Again, you mentioned earlier, you drink tea because you find pleasure in drinking tea. So we're combining that pleasure of drinking something that tastes amazing with actually it being healthy for you. So that's why I added the orange peel in a lot of these recipes.
Oh, nice. Thank you. You know, it's really funny, Ort, because I was, you know, thinking about teas and growing up, you know, my great aunt used to make this tea that I loved. Right. So it was Nest tea out of the jar with lots of extra sugar and lemons. And that's what I knew of tea growing up. You know, so to really understand that there are more, better, natural, healthier options, I think that's significant and absolutely grand.
Well, and Dale, you can actually make these teas, you know, a little, if you have a sweet tooth, you can make it sweeter if you want by just adding, you know, a little bit of honey or agave. For that, the immune one, the astragalus one, you can add local honey, and that's going to also help fight, you know, the allergies around your area. So right. That's another good thing to incorporate into that tea.
Well, and I like that you mentioned local.
And that is an excerpt from Pride Time, Dale Bligrove's podcast, which is available at wjffradio.org. You can hear the rest of that episode at our website, wjffradio.org. And June is Pride Month. Among the local celebrations of Pride Month, Catskill Arts Society has a series of ongoing programs. More information at catskillartssociety.org. And next Saturday, June 18, Catskills Pride is throwing their first annual Pride celebration in the hamlet of Calicoon, highlighting and celebrating the 20-plus LGBTQIA businesses located there and the 20th anniversary of Day to Be Gay. More information at catskillspride.com. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we're off to see the wizard. This is Radio Catskill.
On this week's On the Media, how finally to break through the impasse over gun control. What if we all saw precisely what bullets do to the body of a child?
You can say mass death, gun violence, but these words are somewhat anodyne. Photographs can bring us closer to the actual experience of suffering.
On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
This afternoon at 4.
I'm Peter Sagal. Studies show that the secret to human happiness is a spiffy new car. No, really, it's science. So when it's time to trade up for bliss, donate your used car to us, and we'll turn it into the programs you love.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. El Otro Oz is a bilingual musical with salsa, merengue, and Mexican folk-infused music inspired by The Wizard of Oz. It's produced in association with TheaterWorks USA and was developed locally at the Forestburg Playhouse. Jason Dole spoke with Franklin Trapp, artistic director of the Playhouse, about this reimagined retelling of the classic tale.
Franklin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm really excited to talk about what's happening at the Playhouse, and especially El Otro Oz. It's a really, really exciting show that that we developed last fall at our annual theater festival, which is called In the Works in the Woods. And stay tuned for more information about that. That's going to be happening this fall as well. But El Otro Oz is a bilingual musical for families that retells the story of the Wizard of Oz from a Latino perspective. And it is a beautiful musical. It's written by an award-winning team from New York City, Jaime Lozano, Mando Alvarado, and Tommy Newman. And they've come up with a beautiful way to tell this story in a different way, with a different perspective. And the show is running June 17th through the 19th at the Playhouse, June 17th at 7 p.m., June 18th at 11 a.m., and June 19th at 2 p.m. And this show is actually, I think, it is geared towards families and kids, but I think it's going to be amazing for people of all ages who really just want to explore a multicultural performance and perspective on The Wizard of Oz.
And is this like the premiere of it? Is this the first time people are seeing it?
You're absolutely right. Last fall, the cast and team did a reading of the show for our audiences. And now the show has been picked up by a company called TheaterWorks USA. And they're rehearsing on the Playhouse stage right now. And this is the premiere of a tour that they're going on. So we're kicking off their tour of the show. So this is the premiere, and we're excited to be the host venue for the beginning of what's going to be an amazing tour.
The show was workshopped and created at Forestburg Playhouse?
So yeah, the team brought in a draft of the show last fall, and then they spent a week with the cast and the director, and you know, the playwrights and composers were all there, and they rehearsed and developed and wrote new songs and kind of put the finishing touches on the show. Over the course of this past year, they've been refining it even more, and now the show is ready to go out into the world and you know, have a great, great run. So we're really excited to be here for that.
You're like kind of like releasing it. It's getting off. You're going to have a life of its own and go places, and other people are going to see this and take off. I think it's very much of this place and the best of what this place can be, where it can be like a refuge, a sanctuary, and a creative inspiration where people can come together and create things that then get shared with the rest of the world.
It's pretty neat, and that was the idea behind the In the Works in the Woods festival. Is that we were able to invite creative people from New York City and all over the country, really, to come into the woods and spend a week without any distractions in our beautiful Sullivan Catskills and, you know, develop their new works of art. So it's a really important part of our season now, and that's going to be September 8th through the 11th, which will be the second annual festival. But before that kicks off, we've got a lot of other things happening at the Playhouse. Saturday, we have Ken Page, who is aptly named a Broadway legend. He starred in the original Broadway production of Cats as Old Deuteronomy. He was in The Wiz, once again, Wizard of Oz, and Ain't Misbehavin' and a bunch of shows. He's also the voice of Oogie Boogie and Nightmare Before Christmas. I don't know if I said that right or not, but that's going to be a fun concert. And then we have another weekend of great concerts, the 17th and 18th as well. And then we open our main stage season with a fabulous comedy called Fully Committed. And then we're off to the races with musicals and plays and cabarets and arts education workshops. So it's going to be a busy barn this summer at the Forestburg Playhouse.
And there's information at fbplayhouse.org, information on what you've got for this season. But I know that you keep adding new approaches to what you do there. One of the things that I heard, something about a tent, is that a way that people can enjoy the Forestburg Playhouse?
Exactly. For our Forestburg Under the Stars concert, so Saturday night and next weekend, the concerts are performed outdoors in our gardens, and we have a big, beautiful tent where people can sit outside under cover, or they can sit in the lawn and enjoy these concerts, have some drinks, have some cocktails, and enjoy some of Broadway's finest talent. So that's, we added Forestburg Under the Stars in 2020. Because, as you know, it was pretty hard to figure out how to do live entertainment. But yeah, we were one of the first people, organizations, to get out there with entertainment under the stars, and with that tradition is continuing.
Do you think it's the sort of thing that you will keep doing beyond any kind of medical need to?
Well, we're on our third year of it, so I'm hopeful that this becomes a major part of what we do every summer. The talent that we bring into the Playhouse is unparalleled. You have to go to Broadway or to a cabaret venue in the city to see people like this. So it's really nice to be able to bring it to Sullivan County, and I'd love to continue it.
Again, it's like a pipeline that, you know, running from the city. I always like to tell people there's pipelines that run from the mountains down to the city to bring them all the great water from the Great Catskill Mountains reservoirs. But I love when people set up arts and culture pipelines that bring some of that from the urban areas down to the south, right up to here. And again, because it's not always easy to get out of the mountains to get down to the city for theater, but you've got it right there at the Forestburg Playhouse.
That's right. I like the idea of a creative pipeline. That's awesome.
All right, Franklin. Well, I thank you for catching us up on all of this. Is there anything else you want to let folks know about before we go?
I think, you know, like you said, our website, fbplayhouse.org, has all the info of the wonderful things we're presenting this summer. And make sure to come out and see one of our outdoor concerts and El Otro Oz, because it's going to be an inspiring summer at the Playhouse. So let's kick it off together.
Once again, El Otro Oz starting June 17th, and lots of other things going on. FBPlayhouse.org. Franklin Trapp, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
And Jason was checking in with Franklin Trapp, and Jason's now checking in with us live from Livingston Manor for the Trout Parade. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm outdoors over here in Livingston Manor, where we're getting ready for the parade. You know, it's not a parade yet. Like, the parade itself steps off at 1 o'clock, but there's also a whole street fair that goes along with this, and there's already people filling Main Street Livingston Manor and the park at the end of Main Street, where they have vendors. There's a lot already going on in town as people get ready for Trouter Space.
That is the theme, Trouter Space. Have you seen any folks fulfilling that theme yet?
No, I haven't seen too many fishy folks, nor too many spacey folks. But I think everything's going to get a lot more fishy and a lot more spacey as the day goes on. Oh my God. I'm like, over here with the Democrats, somebody's got a calendar on their head that looks very much spacey and very patriotic as well, as they're looking for voters here.
Speaking of spacey, we have our wonderful volunteers, Amy Brightfield and Jim Lomax. Don't tell them I said that, or can they hear me?
I wasn't quite close enough, but I'm getting closer, though.
I'm kidding. We love them, and they're there at our booth at the vendor fair, which is at the Municipal Park there in Livingston Manor until 3 o'clock. The parade starts at 1. There's a chicken barbecue going on. Town is filling up, according to Jason. Jason, are you at our booth there?
I'm at our booth right here, and it's been swamped with people the whole time I've been here so far. But they just stepped away for a moment so we could actually speak to our volunteers. Jim and Amy are here. Hello, Amy. What are you seeing today?
Everybody's really excited to see him. It's a great theme. It's called Chatter Safe. And so you can't see me, but I'm Princess Leia. This is like a really great day in Livingston Manor. This is, I think it's like the 16th annual Chow Parade. So for a long time, and this is great because it's the first year back after COVID. So everyone's really excited.
That's right. And so now I understand what you're. I didn't get it at first. Why you had these boot things? I
was helping the brain.
No, you're Leia on Hoth. I think it's white and gold.
Oh yeah, I'm the stormtrooper. Isn't the storm? It's when they're on the stormtrooper thing. I'm supposed to have a fishing rod instead of a lightsaber.
So that's the kind of mashups that we expect to see throughout the day. And I have to say, as a bona fide nerd who grew up in Troutown, USA, I had to come. This is my first time here in like almost 9 years. I had to be here for Trouter Space to see how this plays out.
Trouter Space, it sounds like people are having fun already, and the parade again starts at 1 o'clock. There's an after party at Sunshine Colony, and there's an after party at the Catskill Brewery. More information at the Trout Parade's Facebook page. And, you know, there's I believe that the Trout Parade is still benefiting the Livingston Manor Central School District's art and music programs and the food pantries. It's produced by Calliope on Main Foundation, the Chamber of Commerce, Catskill Arts Society, and the Fly Fishing Center and Museum. Who else are you seeing out there among the Trouter Space gatherers?
I'm seeing folks young and old. I'm seeing folks and their canines, not so many felines so far. Over here in the vendors area, I'm seeing many crafts people. People have interesting jewelry and also clothing. Candles, lots of cool stuff over here. Looks like homemade barbecue sauces. And also I do want to mention that this is like a great weekend if you like town gatherings and parades, because tomorrow's the tractor parade as well.
Yeah, in Calicoon. The Calicoon tractor parade tomorrow, and the youth center has their chicken barbecue, and the town gets filled up with all the tractors. That's great. It's a great weekend for parades.
Yeah. So I'm gonna do two parades this weekend, and I hope I make it back into work on Monday.
You might be paraded out. Well, look for Jason there. Look for the WJFF Radio Catskill booth at the Trout Parade today. And Jason, I will see you in a little bit. I'm going to come up.
Okay, great, good. We'll see you when you get here. Trout Parade, Trouter Space.
Trouter Space. All right. And again, thanks, Jason. Tomorrow is the 26th annual Calicoon Tractor Parade, kicking off at noon in Calicoon. The Youth Center has more information on their Facebook page about that. And that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. If you've missed any of our episodes, you can find them online at WJFFradio.org, as well as all of our podcasts and other past episodes of your favorite locally produced programs. Some of which are coming up next. Farm and Country is at 11, Catskill Character 11:30, Janice Adams, and more all throughout the day until 4 o'clock here on your public radio station, Radio Catskill. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Tavern on Main Bar and Restaurant in Jeffersonville. Comforting American fare in a cozy neighborhood atmosphere. Menus and takeout orders available online. TavernOnMainNY.com. From the Narrowsburg Union, featuring information about regional attractions and activities, along with products by the region's artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen at Catskills Curated. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
Angela Page here from Folk Plus. On the next show, we'll have no words. All of the cuts will be instrumentals. Maybe some you know. Fast banjo, slow harps, all instrumentals on the next Folk Plus. That's next Sunday at 4.
Today's forecast, a mix of clouds and sun in the morning, giving way to cloudy skies this afternoon, high of 72. Steady rain early tomorrow with showers and perhaps some thunderstorms developing in the afternoon, high of 67. Farm and Country is next.
This is WJFF Jeffersonville and W233AH Monticello.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.